Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Okay, so how's it going? Any questions, issues? What's coming up on March 1st? First presentation. So how's it going so far? When are you going to show the slides to your advisors? How far before the first presentation?
Hours.
At least
15 minutes. Send an email and say, our teacher told us we had to show you these before the presentation, so here they are. As you run off to the presentation. How many of you met with your advisors this week? And last week? Okay. I think, keeping your advisors engaged is really important.
Question, yeah. The seniors on 2 when do they get there?
They're also on the 1st. Yeah, so everything will be on the 1st. Their midterm presentations and your midterm presentations.
Our advisor was just asking if there was another day, because that was the main convenient time.
Yeah.
She said if it really has to be, she can try to make it work.
Unfortunately, we're really constrained on when we do these things because of the size.
She's advisor for two groups.
Yeah. So if the advisors aren't present because they have scheduling conflicts for this one, that's okay. I mean, it happens. We do the presentation, the senior design day on the 12th of April. Faculty kind of know about that, and they try not to schedule over that. But the midterm's a little more fluid, and they're really more internal reviews. So if your advisors are not going to be at your midterms, I would suggest you do a presentation for them maybe at your weekly meeting with them, just so they see what you're presenting. The more you get your advisors engaged, and I know a lot of students don't really include their advisors in things, but the more you get them engaged, the more help you're going to get out of them. They just have to be, they have to kind of get emotionally committed to the project. So what was the assignment due this week?
Revision
of? Okay, so how did that go? Are the problem statements now more than 2 pages?
No.
No? Why not?
They're just better written.
Okay, so... So what I want to talk about today is really the biggest section in the document. It's the hardest. I think historically this has been the hardest section for students to write, which is the approach section. This will be, by the time you're done with senior design, this section should be about 20 pages. I mean, it's a pretty big section, and it's got, of course, a lot of stuff in it. So what I thought we would do today is I'll talk a little bit about what should be in this section. And then I'll show you a couple examples, one from Senior Design 1 and one from Senior Design 2, so you can see where these things kind of sit at the end of during Senior Design 1. So the approach section, what's the purpose of the approach section? This is where you're going to articulate your design, right? So how do engineers, and who's the audience for the approach section? This was an interesting discussion I had earlier in the week with a couple senior design students and then our course coordinators. So who's the audience for these design documents you're writing? Who's the primary audience?
Like the client you're designing for.
Okay. And who's that?
Well, in this case, it would be you or our course coordinator.
Wrong. Good. You got the right first part right. Who are the customers for these documents? When you're writing these and you started thinking of the point of view, is the customer for this document your course coordinator? They're certainly the grader, but are they the real customer? I see some people saying no, so then who is the customer?
I guess it would depend on your project. I mean, we're building a bridge, so I feel like we're trying to address Temple's community and Temple itself to, I guess, basically convince them why they should build our design.
Okay, so who are you writing? If you were doing this project as part of a consulting construction firm, who would you be writing that document to? Amber? That's a safe answer. Unfortunately, often you're writing it to for political scientists and English majors who couldn't get jobs and end up being project managers for engineering projects. And those are actually worse because they like to think they know more than engineers, but that's a, sort of a, another story. But if you're going to build this bridge across Broad Street, what... this document would go to some kind of city planning commission,
that's
probably,
what I mean,
right?
I was going to say it would either go to like the Board of Trustees for Temple or it would go to some board to be approved by the city.
By the city.
So some type of official that
right.
would need to impress, I guess.
So what are the most important things you need to accomplish in this approach section to satisfy those kinds of people?
Point out specific like codes and stuff that we're going to run into problems with that you mentioned in your design constraints, and maybe go about how you're going to fix those problems or get around those problems.
Okay, so you mentioned a good word, design constraints. So what's one of the major... No, let me just write goals. What's one of the major goals of your approach section?
Or specific design or just
component? No, so what you just said is pretty much there. You said design constraints, you said convincing. So
all right, well, for example, like one of our biggest constraints is just the fact, you know, to be able to build a bridge over Broad Street, to build a structure over Broad Street because it'll obstruct the view of City Hall, so that's going to be one of our biggest design constraints to overcome. So we're going to have to basically point out the necessity of the design to, again, convince those officials that we need to have that bridge despite the constraint.
So one of the goals is to convince the audience that you meet the design constraints, right? That's essentially what you're saying. So this is the primary goal of the approach section, is to convince us that, to convince your audience that your design is feasible and it will meet the constraints. This is often called technical feasibility. When you write documents like this, particularly if you're proposing work, very often the sponsor or the agency you're writing those to will have a matrix of how they're going to score your document, and they'll assign you points for different sections of the document. They'll say, well, 30% of your score comes from technical feasibility. This is always fairly prominent because obviously if your approach isn't feasible, they're not going to want to fund it. Your management's not going to let you execute that. So technical feasibility is certainly an important approach, an important element of the sort of important goal of the approach section. What's the second goal of the approach section? Once you've demonstrated that the design is feasible.
Money,
very good. What about money?
Budget.
Meets budget constraints. What else? In addition, we've talked about cost. Performance is really technical feasibility.
Maybe cost effectiveness.
No. What is cost, performance? There were four dimensions that we say all projects kind of, you have to balance these.
When can you roll it out by? Time.
Schedule, right? Cost, performance, schedule, and what was the fourth? There was a slide on one of my original presentations about design. There were these four points around the square, right? Cost, performance, schedule, and risk. You can meet, you know, we've talked a bit now about, you can meet, for example, technical feasibility, but you may have a very risky project. The schedule may be very tight, the economic constraints may be very tight, or the technical aspects of it just may be very risky. So you're going to, one of the aspects, we won't do a lot of on risk mitigation here in senior design, but certainly when you get into real projects, you're going to be faced with that. Your management's always going to ask you questions like, how risky is this? And how can you mitigate that risk? Give me an example of a company that, or a business rather, that revolves entirely around predicting risk.
Insurance,
right? The whole insurance industry is basically one big risk prediction engine. And many, many institutions now have organizations that do nothing but assess risk for their technologies and things. An example of that here at Temple is if you want to take students on a trip at Temple, you have to write a document and send it to the office that manages risk management office. And they actually look at that, the risk of you taking students on a trip, and you know, if something catastrophic happens, which we hope wouldn't, there's obviously the universities at risk, and they'll make decisions about insurance and other things based on that. Well, similarly, in your projects, your management's ultimately going to want to know what chance you have to deliver on schedule. And if you tell them, well, I think the schedule's really tight, then they'll ask you, well, how can we mitigate that risk? And usually that means either spending more money, that means changing the technical feasibility, or that means sort of changing perhaps the schedule. So we have budget, schedule, cost, and all those kinds of issues. What's another aspect of the approach? What's another goal? Yeah.
I have a question about back to the technical feasibility.
Okay.
It's actually showing the solution to each constraint.
Yes. And we'll get into that. That the point of your approach section is basically going to lay this thing out technically. And you're going to use all of your engineering analysis to show that you can meet constraints. How about another goal of the approach section? These things generally are what we often call project management. And again, when you write proposals, for example, they will evaluate you on how sound your project management plan is. So what are some other things that need to go in the approach? It's a little bit, there's one other point I wanted to bring in, which is sort of related to these two. What is the, we talked last class about problem decomposition, right? And the point, and what was the focal point of that discussion? What was sort of one of the outputs or deliverables to convince me that you've done good problem decomposition? The block diagram, right? So one of the big things we need to see in approach is your problem decomposition. And this relates to your block diagram. So when we talk about structuring this this approach section, let's talk a little bit about the outline for this approach section. Whenever you write a big document like this section, you should always go through a group exercise where you develop an outline for the document and try to refine that so everybody knows what pieces need to be written. So how are you going to begin the approach section? What's the first major section that should be in the approach section? Given that you've done your cover page, your abstract, your problem statement, your design constraints, you now have a block diagram. You're ready to tell me how you're actually going to go about this thing? So the first chunk should be your system overview. And this is where you're actually going to show your block diagram. So you're going to build on what you've established in your problem statement. And you're going to now introduce your solution. In a general sense, you're going to present the block diagram and you're going to say, basically, this is our proposed solution. And you're going to explain at a functional level how your block diagram works, how your system works, or how you're going to sort of walk through the block diagram so that your audience understands how your proposed solution is going to work and what it's going to accomplish. After you've done that, what's next? You've laid out your proposed solution. What's going to happen next? And how are those going to be conceptually organized?
Maybe from the most difficult to deal with to the least difficult to deal with.
From the block diagram. Thank you. So what you're going to do next is talk about the components of your system, section by section, and this will be based on your block diagram. And you'll have a number of sections based on that. In some projects, this might fall out with hardware versus software. In some projects, this could just be major components in the system. But the point of beginning with the block diagram is that provides a context. And from that context, then, you'll go ahead and explain the individual components of that system. And in a moment, we'll drill down a little bit more into what should be in these sections. So once you've done the technical feasibility pieces of the system, what's next? So through these sections, you'll actually have addressed how you're designing to meet particular design constraints and all that. So by the time this is done, at this point in the document, I will say, okay, it seems like this project is technically feasible. I believe if they build this, because the design should be clear. If you build this, it will meet your design constraints. What are some of the other things you have to convey in this approach section?
Well,
related to some of the things we talked about over here. Yes, you're going to need a management plan, but probably prior, that's going to come, I think, a little bit later. Once you've demonstrated technical feasibility, what's the next thing you need to talk about? Particularly for those of you who are building products or building small systems. What aspect of that, number two? It's going to be cost, right? The next, you should have a section devoted to your cost analysis. Now, later in the semester, we'll go through in more detail how you can cost your project, your product. But that's pretty straightforward. We'll show you how to basically can do a what we call a bill of materials, compute the cost of components, and then project based on that what the manufacturing cost might be. So you've done feasibility. You've also shown now that you can build this within the budget or the cost guidelines for the project. Now you want to come in with your schedule and your plan. So now you're going to tell us how you're actually going to execute this. What the major, and this is where you'll show your show some screenshots from your Microsoft project plans. And this is where you'll talk about what the major activities are, what the major skills required are, who you know what the skills of your team members are and so forth, and how you're going to address the scheduling aspects of it. And then the last thing that you probably need in this section, students don't always do this, but some discussion of risk and challenges. What are the technically risky parts of this project? There's going to be some unknowns. You're going to promise certain things can be done, and you hopefully have some design to back that up, but there will be some risks associated with that. So let's talk a little bit about how you actually, within one of these sections where you're talking about a component of your system, so in our in this discussion of early on about evidence of design, we talked about the problem of designing a golf club. So what might one of these sections look like for something like a golf club? Well, let's talk about the design of this shaft of the golf club. So if you had a section that dealt with the design of the shaft, what are some of the things I would expect to see in that section? Material selection, good. What else? And if you don't play golf, if you play tennis or whatever, issues are pretty much the same. The what? Well, that's going to come in the cost section. We're up here just on the technical issues. What? Weight? Weight is good. Flexibility, good. Aerodynamics, very good. And if we were doing the head, certainly aerodynamics would be a big issue. What else?
Durability,
very good. Very good. In fact, you could probably do a senior design project just on the shaft of a golf club, right? Because it is pretty complicated. There was something.
Dimensions.
What specifically about the dimensions? Yeah, the dimensions are excellent, but be more specific.
Like diameter.
Diameter and length, right? So that's a pretty big section. Anything else? Any other issues you might think about? There's a couple we've missed. They're sort of somewhat related to these, but I want to draw them out as specific issues. What's this shaft going to look like? I was reading this morning about this car that's being built by this Italian high-end car manufacturer, Pagnesi or something like that, which sells, it's a bargain at $1.1 million. And it goes like 250 miles an hour and this kind of thing. But for that kind of, for that amount of money, the interior of this car is brushed aluminum. And I couldn't help but think, if I was spending a $1.1 million on a car, would I want it to look like brushed aluminum on the inside? If you're taking on the track, that might be okay, but it's being made for street drivers. So what about the shaft? What's some other considerations?
The finish.
The finish. Thank you. How it looks, right? And in addition to all these things, there's an issue related to this. Is this shaft just going to be one big cylinder? It's what? Right, it's going to be tailored. It could either be, and I haven't even looked at golf clubs lately, but it could be continuously tailored, or it could be maybe ridged. And there might also be, I don't know if it has ridges on it, but there might also be some finish to it in terms of some kind of surface modifications, but you're certainly going to want to worry about how it looks, because you're going to, at some point, want this thing to look nice and shiny in the showroom so everybody's happy with it. So these are a lot of really good technical issues to discuss on this shaft. Now, the main point I wanted to make today is, how are we going to discuss these things as engineers? And it's sort of similar to what we talked about with the technical presentation last time. So you hand me your design document, and it's 50 pages of solid text. What's wrong with that? And why do we need such things? And equations and figures. Not quite. We had somebody, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, I think it was, it was a Senior Design 2 document. And as you can imagine, I beat on you a lot for visual impact of your documents. You got to have a few pictures here and there, make it look interesting. They put a picture of a 9-volt Duracell battery on the first page of the approach section. They literally had a picture of a 9-volt Duracell battery. So one of the course coordinators wrote me and said, why do you think they put this picture here? And I said, well, because I tell them to put lots of pictures in a document. So they probably, you know, were short on ideas for pictures, and they thought, well, the device uses a battery, so we might as well put a battery in as a picture. That didn't help them too much. So when we talk as engineers about these issues, what are we expect? How are you going to convince me that you really know how to design this system? What the essence of design as engineers means something a little bit different than what design means when you're talking about, for example, the look of an automobile. Though even today, even the visual look of an automobile is actually heavily designed in the same way engineers design systems for aerodynamics and things like that. So what is the ultimate way that you convince me that a particular design is the best approach? And this is something I think that senior design students struggle with, because you don't know as much about the topic. You don't have many years of experience in this.
To use references that reinforce your decisions.
Close, but if you're doing if you're sort of doing something for the first time, there's not going to be a reference that says this is the way to design that. If you're doing that, if you're in a situation like that, you're probably doing more systems integration than actual design.
Present alternatives and tell you why they are worse than your choice.
Okay, and what's a good way to do that in language that engineers relate to? No. We get a lot of that, and we get a lot of this, and that's why I like to talk a little bit about this. And that's not bad. But there's design is all about optimizing your system to meet your design constraints. So when we talk about optimization in an engineering sense, what are we talking about? When your little trip planner in your car gives you a route from here to downtown, it doesn't present you with a list of pros and cons and says, you know, this might be a good route, might be a bad route. What does it do? How does it actually decide these little routes, these routes that they come up with? So what are they doing in a mathematical sense? It uses an algorithm, and what does it do to that algorithm? It what? Which is a process we call what? I'm looking for a word that begins with O.
Optimization.
Thank you. Design, in an engineering sense, implies optimization. And what you're optimizing typically is some function. We often will say cost is equal to some function of, and we'll have a bunch of variables. And you will show us that you have computed the parameters of your system, things like the height, the diameter, to optimize this function, to give you the maximum or minimum depending on, you know, the direction of that. But generally, you're going to show us that you use all these design equations that you have, all this knowledge about engineering, to reduce these issues to a set of equations, and then you manipulate those equations to give you optimum performance. In a software sense, there's a lot of different systems like route planners and airline travel reservations. All these systems basically work on the same principle. They have a function. They give you access to some of the knobs on that function, like shortest distance, you don't want to pay tolls, fastest time, and then it finds you the best solution given those constraints. So this is often what we call a constrained optimization. Just about every product you use or every system you use today has been optimized, even if we're talking about something simple like these water bottles. Every aspect of that design has been mathematically optimized to minimize cost or you know, and all the other constraints associated with it. Now, one of the more interesting debates I heard was the number of threads on the cap on one of these water bottles. There's a whole theory about that, whether it should have two threads, three threads, four threads. So this is what we're after in the approach section. And this is really hard for you, and it's why a lot of students really struggle with the approach section. We want the approach section to show us with equations, with figures, with engineering analysis, to show us that your design optimizes whatever cost function you have for the product. And the cost function is essentially your design constraints. It must do this, it must do that. And you want to prove to us that your design is going to meet all of those constraints. And if you've done your constraints properly, they will lead you to a particular solution that's better than the rest because it kind of uniquely satisfies all of those competing constraints. And when we talk about evidence of design, if you've distilled your project down to this, and you're showing us then that you're choosing the parameters of your system based on optimizing that, then, you know, you're home free. That's evidence of design. So, there must be any questions on this? We'll go through some examples. And not all these documents do this, but this is I find this is probably the hardest thing for students to grasp in senior design. You're so quick to want to show us what you built. This week we're going through senior design 2 first hardware prototypes. And you know, the students understandably are very eager to show us what they've actually built. But it's not just about what they've built, but it's about whether what they've built is in line with the design that they've proposed in their design documents. And that's where students usually get into trouble, because at the last minute they're running off to Home Depot and buying little parts here and there, trying to make everything work at the last minute. And then you look at it and you say, well, that's nice and it may work, but that doesn't really do what you described in your design document. Also, you know, historically students will say, oh, you do all this writing in senior design, but that's just like another side task. It's not really related to actually building your product or your project, and that's not true. So if you find yourself kind of making up stuff to satisfy these weekly deliverables, you probably don't have a complete project view yet of your product, of your project. You don't really understand how everything's fitting together. So this is a design document that was I think it was probably the best design document for the senior design projects that finished in fall of 2010. I've shown you bits and pieces of this before. This is a project that involves putting 5 wind turbines on the new McGonagall building that's being built on Broad Street. You may have seen they've started to frame it with some of the steel and iron, and when they're done, these 5 wind turbines are going to sit on the front of that building. So this project was focused on trying to predict how much energy those wind turbines were going to produce. And to do that, they had to employ some fluid dynamics simulation software that allowed them to take measurements of the wind speeds at various locations, plug them into the CFD simulation, and actually produce maps of what the wind speeds would be like at various locations along the top of that building so that we could predict what the best location for those wind turbines were going to be. So let's look at some of the things they did in their approach section. To articulate this. So they began with a little bit of an introduction into the problem. Showed us a picture of the site at which the system was going to be deployed, which of course makes a big difference because we're talking about trying to model actual wind speeds at a very fine-grained level on various locations along the roof of that building and such. So to do this project, they actually had to get a very detailed 3D model of campus, which we were able to get. So in terms of introducing us to the project, they do a pretty good job of providing some relevant figures and explaining in general terms sort of what's involved. Then they proceeded to explain to us how the computer simulation tool was going to work and what some of the issues were in that using that tool, because that was obviously going to be really integral to this project, that the accuracy of this tool and how they were going to have to configure the tool to make it produce these simulations. So they explained a little bit about the theory behind the tool, and that's an important part of your approach section when you get into these things. You're going to have to explain to us to get to the point where you have actual design equations. You're going to have to explain to us some of the theory. We don't just want you to sort of pull these equations out of thin air. In this particular project, the boundary conditions around the buildings and such make a big, really impact the ultimate solution. So you have to sort of explain how that's going to work and what kind of accuracy you're going to need to model those boundary conditions. Then a second big issue in this project was the overall wind speeds in Philadelphia area and how they vary. So they talk a little, in the next section they talk about climatology. And they talk a little bit about typical wind speed patterns. And as we talked about last class, they sort of present this information in a way that you would, an expert or someone knowledgeable about this technical area, would expect to see the data. Then they did a section which was, this is a little bit specific to this project, but they actually tried to validate the model and show us that under some test cases, the model would actually produce realistic results. And that was important for this project because these models have limitations. And they did that using, you know, a mixture of visuals. They violated a margin boundary here, which wasn't great. And they talked about the reason why they needed to go and collect data so that they could validate the model. And then they talked a little bit about how they were going to actually instrument collection of the data, because the data collection was another element of this project. At the time they conceived the project, we didn't know what data we would have access to, so they planned on doing extensive data collection. So they designed a test rig to collect the data. They actually had to select equipment to test the data. And that's how they chose to end their approach section. Because this was a simulation project, they didn't have some of the cost issues and other such things that you would expect. Now, let me show you a second project. This is a senior design 2 project this semester, and they just turned in their approach section, which is really a revised approach section from first semester. They just turned that approach section in this past week. So this is a project where they're building a guitar amplifier based on a combination of semiconductors and vacuum tubes. So in this approach section, this is actually a better model because this is closer to what we're asking you to do this semester. But in this approach section, they begin with a block diagram and explain the different components of the system briefly. And then they go into the design of each one of those major components. And they start with some basic theory about amplifiers. They talk a little bit about how we characterize performance, but they eventually wind that down to some design equations that allow them to actually select components and such. So now they end up with a specific power amplifier design, and this is just one of the components. And I think this is a really good model for what we're looking for, because they start with generalized theory. They show us some of the design issues in designing these kinds of amplifiers. They develop the design equations for the amplifier, and then they optimize those equations given for their constraints, and they produce a final design for that component. So if you're looking for a roadmap for how to write one of these subsections, this is a very good template for that. Then they go on to the phase inverter, a second component of the system, and again, do the similar kind of things so that they end up with a specific design. And then they go through other pieces of the system, the same kind of thing, and produce the final design. Then they talk a little bit about the digital signal processing components of the system and go through some of that. And they talk then about the power supply, and they're done. Now, what's wrong with this section? So this group is literally building a guitar amplifier. It's going to be a box containing lots of electronics. That box is going to produce a lot of power. So who are the mechanical engineers in the room? I know we have a few of you. What's missing? And I actually nailed them on this, and it's my own team, so that's kind of hard, but I nailed them on this. How are you going to put that into a box, right? All of the mechanical issues associated with that design. There's ventilation issues. There's mounting issues because you've got these tubes which are burning really hot sitting next to electrical components. There's all sorts of wire electrical issues that if you don't want this thing to be really noisy or to have a lot of hum, there's how you route wires and all these kinds of issues. Very important. So they were missing the mechanical design. They've also actually done an extensive cost analysis, but that wasn't in this approach section. So that was missing as well. And then there was no real research plan about how they're going to actually execute this thing. So they got pinged on those kinds of things. So, questions about the approach section? And your questions can be very specific to your projects. Yes.
I mean, I get the breakdown of the components and everything, but when you talk about the schedule and plan, is that more of like in our instance with the design of the pedestrian bridge, it would be more of like a construction schedule that you're asking for?
Yeah. I mean, in your case, not so much a construction schedule, but in the process of producing this design, there's a series of events that have to happen, right?
Yeah, so we're just spitting that order out.
Right. But that order shouldn't be totally sequential, as we talked about. It should be,
There's
things that can be done in parallel. Okay. And it's articulating that along a timeline. And also, I know this is a little bit hard, but trying to also... Base that in how much effort each one of those tasks are going to take and how much time each individual has to work on that. If you had a really developed Microsoft project schedule, you'd actually have a piece of it where you computed how much time each person was spending on the project. It all kind of adds up. To every task, you assign a person and a time. And all that should add up to, as we talked about, you can take four people times, 40 hours a week, well, four people times 10 hours a week, 40 hours a week times 20 or 30 weeks, and that's the total amount of labor time you have to work on the project. The projects I've looked at so far are pretty decent. I mean, I think people are doing a pretty good job so far. Question? Which project is this? This is what, Nova Thermal? And you're waiting on whose output?
The system to finish being built.
Oh, this is the one with the Philadelphia Water Works, right? Yeah, that's a problem, right? It's tough when you're dependent on someone and they walk in one day and say, we have a 6-week schedule slip. Because you've got to pay your engineers now to sit at the desk and do nothing. It's a problem. I probably need to take that up with your course coordinator. But I would do your schedule based on assuming everything was in play, based on sort of when you signed on to the project, what the plan was. If all that stuff was supposed to be in place by the beginning of the semester, you can just do your schedule based on that. And then you can note those things as schedule slips. Other questions? This is your chance to get some insight into what your approach section should look like. The approach section is going to take a lot of time to write. I think one of the problems teams face is they don't allocate enough time for writing the approach section. So they run out of time, and therefore they end up dropping things from their approach section because they don't have time to include them. So, just be aware of that. All right, well, if you have, again, people have really struggled with this here at Temple. So as you have questions on this, we can talk one-on-one or something, but I don't want you losing a lot of time thinking about what you should write. Talk with your course coordinator about what they expect to see in your approach section. And they can give you some ideas of very, very specific to your project. Okay, so if there are no other questions, what's going on Thursday? Career fair. I would like all of you to go to the career fair. Now, you're going to say, why as an engineer should I go see how a hotel management company interviews people? But you need to learn how this whole game works. And if you want to have a job, you're going to be taking graduating in fall, in what? This is spring, fall, right?
Yeah.
If you want to have a job January 1st, when do you need to start looking for a job? Seriously, it's now. So do try to get over to the career fair. Just walk around and look at the companies, look at how they present themselves, look at how people interact with their interviewers and things, and just get some familiarity with how the whole game works. Yes?
Professor, what's a good attire for this career? Like the usual for here, or is it more relaxed?
I think it's a little more relaxed at the university level. You know, I would say business casual is fine. I've never been one. If a student shows up in a three-piece suit, like a male student, for something like a university career fair, to me that looks like they're trying a little bit hard. I actually have a difference of opinion from some of our other colleagues here in the college, but I've been on both all sides of the hiring fence, and I think engineers are ultimately hired on their skills. So you don't want to look too eager.
Slick back hair, we're about to
say that. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're interviewing for a blood and guts engineering position and you show up, you know, looking really dressed really, really well, I don't know. So in some environments, that's actually a negative. But you want to look professional. You want to look comfortable. Okay. So I'll talk a little bit with the honors students.